Hello, everybody. This is Bill Knauer, and you're listening to Author, where we talk about writing and life because, and I mean this now, what it takes to write the book you want to write is what it takes to lead the life you want to lead. It's true. It's true. Author to Author is brought to you by Author Magazine, the premier free writing magazine on the internet, featuring articles on writing and the writing life, as well as video and audio interviews with best-selling and award-winning authors across the genres. We had to miss a month for the first time since 2007. I know. But we're back. We've got a new issue up now, including my interview with the wonderful writer and storyteller Margot Lightman, author of Long Story Short, the only storytelling guide you'll ever need. It was a great conversation we had. So that's up there now at authormagazine.org, and along with some fabulous articles about writing and the writing life. And we're funded by the Pacific Northwest Writers Association, supporting writers from pen to publication since 1955. You can learn about the PNWA and their outstanding writers conference. If you're going to go to one conference this year, there's a lot of good ones in the Northwest, but God, the PNWA is top notch, and they're offering something called the Leap of Faith. You can get the conference at a reduced price if you sign up now, and you will get to sign up for extra pitch sessions, even though we haven't yet picked out the agents to whom you would pitch. So we're asking you to take a leap of faith, but it's worth it, boy. We get lots of good agents, and like I said, it's about $100 less than it would be otherwise. So you can find out about the PNWA at pnwa.org. All right, well, this is going to be my last show before the new year, so let's make it a good one. My guest today is Gabrielle Myers, who wears many, many hats. She is the an associate professor of English at San Joaquin Delta College, where I believe she's just finished administering finals to her lucky students. But she's author of poems and essays which have been published in professional journals and literary magazines. She's also a chef and the author of a book called The New Prostate Cancer Nutrition Book, which sounds great, but we're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about her memoir, relatively brand new memoir, Hive Mind. Let's get her on here and do just that. Gabrielle, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Bill. I'm happy to be here.
All right. Deep breath. You just got finished with finals. Is this true? Did you just finish up for the semester?
I did. Now I have the fun grading frenzy at the end of the semester.
All right, now.
Yes, my finish just wrote their research essays and gave them to me. So very exciting.
Are you teaching undergraduates?
I am, yes. I teach at community college in the Central Valley of California.
Do you like doing that?
Oh, I love it. There's nothing more exciting than helping students really develop their own original voices.
Do they want to be helped in that, or do they like, just get me through this? do they actually want to be helped?
Some of them don't know that they want to be helped when they arrive at the beginning of the semester, but then they realize that it's an opportunity to really grow and develop themselves. So I have some wonderful students that have really worked hard this semester. So I'm excited to read their writing.
Well, that is good. You sound like an excellent teacher, Gabrielle, and clearly someone who loves to write. You've written a beautiful memoir in Hive Mind. It has a very original voice. See, I'm sounding like a professor right now, just having received your paper. But it is a very original piece. And it seems to me, and I read it without having done much research on you, because I prefer to do things that way. And then I come to find out how much poetry you've written. It felt like a poet's memoir. Was that your intention as you sat down to write, or that's just your voice, and that's how it comes out?
You know, when I started writing about the experience on the farm, originally it was through a series of poems, since that's what I was studying at the time was poetry. But I felt like I couldn't really tell the story the way that it needed to be told through poetry. And so I ended up looking back at journal entries and really developing the narrative arc after I had a batch of poems. So it kind of emerged from the poetry into the prose.
So we should say briefly, I'm not going to give away the full arc of the book, but it details about 3 years of your life. It's about three and a half years of your life when you're working on, primarily it's about your time working on this organic farm down in, is it Northern California? Where is it? I can't remember.
In the Sacramento Valley of Northern California.
Yeah, and so it deals with your relationship with the women there and your relationship with your mom. And we want to give it all away, but in your own, but your own, really, your own spiritual curiosity and own spiritual questions, which are a, play a primary role, I felt, in the book. Did you, you said you went back to your journals. Did you actually plunder your journals themselves in the book, or were they simply there as a reference point?
Probably about 10 or 15% of the book came from my journals, and I developed them and kind of flushed out the journal entries to set the scene around them. But then I used that pacing and the idea of having dates at the top and taking telling the story scene by scene, so to speak, through kind of the idea of the journal. So I like the idea of the date kind of being attached to the day as a way of marking time and marking the progression of kind of the story itself.
I felt that really worked because it's an impressionistic kind of book almost. And it did help kind of root it in time and space. Not that it was so, not that it's so imagistic, but it was pretty, but it was a more impressionistic approach to a narrative than say a traditional, you know, just your traditional story. So I felt it was a good choice on your part. I thought it really helped.
Thank you.
For whatever it's worth. All right, but let's talk to you, talk about your, just your life as a writer. When did writing, because you were in the food industry for a while, you were a chef, a cook, and so that was, and you're still obviously interested in food, but when did writing light up for you?
I wrote a lot in high school. I had a wonderful English teacher, and I wrote a bunch of, I called them stories, short stories back then, but really they were the seeds of memoir, because they were all rooted in my life as a teenager. And I wrote some poetry, and in college I studied English and wrote as well and did independent projects where I'd craft some poems. But then I stopped all that when I graduated from college to really focus on cooking, and went to culinary school and worked in restaurants, very high-paced restaurants in the Bay Area of San Francisco through most of my 20s to the end of to really to the end of my 20s. And then I came back to writing really actually right after my mom's attempted suicide. And it was kind of my way of making sense out of the world again after kind of what felt like a something that I had trouble sorting through, I guess, and really fully understanding. So the writing kind of helped me with that. And then I just fell back in love with writing and reading as well, and kind of the power behind the word and what it can do to transform, I think, the writer, but also to express, I guess, the writer's thoughts to the world. And so I went back to graduate school at that point in my early 30s to study poetry and nonfiction and English as well.
Yeah.
That's where I kind of started a full course on it.
Yeah, and did you find school useful in that regard?
I did. I did. Mainly, I think what it taught me more than anything was to be a careful reader and to voice my ideas on what I've read. And I think that, and, you know, this, I'm not the only one to think this, that the best way to become a writer is to read actively. And if you really pay attention to an author's word choice and sentence structure and how they deliver dialogue, and how they communicate metaphor, that's really the so important. I also was lucky. I had wonderful mentors at UC Davis and St. Mary's College of California. So that really helped me along my way. Teachers that were willing to kind of take me under their wing and help me develop. So.
What did you need to learn? I mean, what when you think back on the difference between Gabrielle before she had begun her study, and then when she sat down to write this book, say, or finish, what did she need to learn besides to read carefully?
I think that before, when I would write, I would think that, I guess, the words that I put on the page communicated what I wanted them to communicate because it was in my head. And I felt like those words were kind of full enough for the reader, but I think that what school and just studying in general, I mean, the study continues way after you finish your program.
Sure.
And really the test of that comes years later, was to, I guess, in some ways see things as the reader would see them and know that I really have to explain my thoughts and give them a significant amount of material to chew on. And what I mean by that is not so much just populating the page with words, but thinking about each word very carefully and what the reader will, or how the reader will understand that word as much as possible.
Yeah.
I mean, there's always going to be a distance there, but I guess as writers, we're constantly trying to bridge that gap between what we're trying to communicate and what is communicated.
Yeah, well, it's always going to be, I don't know, I've had the experience when I share things that, and I tend to write things that are not my, well, I don't tend, I write nonfiction, and they're memoir-ish and inspirational. I try to inspire people. So even when people like it, and that's usually what I hear from people, you know, is when they like it, I still feel like they've read something different than what I wrote. Even if they loved it and want to thank me for it, I still feel like they read their own piece and it wasn't quite what I wrote. And does that make sense to you?
It does. It does. Because, I mean, that's what the beauty of, I think, writing is, that the reader's imagination is what really kind of carries everything through. And that doesn't, I don't think, happen as much, I don't think, in any other genre. But with writing, and specifically with memoir, I think, there's that base there that is exciting, and it's in each reader's mind that they kind of turn the story through them.
You know, it's funny. I write memoir now, as I said, but I didn't. I wrote fiction for years, but the first place I really learned to write was poetry when I was a young man. I wrote a lot of, I loved poetry and I wrote a bunch of it. And when I started writing memoir, and I'm curious if you agree with this, I felt that poetry has a direct link to memoir, that in many ways they're the same thing. It's just that the poem's a much shorter memoir. Does that make sense?
Yes.
It's the same thing, really.
I feel the same way. I think of
poem
as almost like a picture, or it captures a scene. In just a moment, like a snapshot, and the memoir being kind of like a full-length feature of it all. But the roots are the same, really.
Yeah. Yeah, really, because when I think about, when I'm writing memoirs, so I'm writing, I know what happened, right? So I'm not like in my fiction world where I got to make stuff up, or I got to figure out what, I know what happened. But then the question is, how do I want to look at that scene? Like, how am I going to look at that moment to communicate what I want to communicate about it? Because it's almost like a moment's like a diamond, and you can look at it in so many different ways, and each way will say something different about it. I feel like I spend a lot of time just choosing the angle from which I want to look at the thing I'm trying to communicate, which reminds me of a poem. Does that resonate with you?
It does, yes. And turning it kind of this way and that, I think you eventually come to an understanding of it all.
Yeah, because don't you, I find to be the case that it's like, you talked about writing for the reader. The idea of having to communicate something to someone who isn't walking around inside your head, I feel like I learn to understand it better when I communicate it in that way, when I put it down in a way that someone else who isn't me could possibly understand it. I feel like I know it better in a way. Do you go through
that? Yeah, there's something about that writing process where I think with memoir, it's like it begins with a question, I think, in the writer's mind. They're trying to understand how something happened or an event that occurred and how to process it and go about, I guess, assimilating it into their understanding of the world before the experience or after the experience. And I think that leads to the writing in many ways, that question that at the heart of it.
What is, now this is, speaking of college, this feels a little bit like a term paper question, but I'm going to ask it of you anyway, which is when you think back on the book, and sometimes, you know, I ask it because I think these things change in the writer when they begin it, a book, until when they finish. What do you feel like was the central question you were asking when you sat down to write this book, write Hive Mind?
How to maintain ourselves, sustain ourselves in a positive way through moments, I guess, when we question when we can do that. That's, I guess, the central question. Trying to understand, you know, why some people make the decision to take their life and why some people make the decision to do the opposite, and how, I guess, one can control, I guess, the answer to that question in themselves, but also control, or I guess, understand another's decision one way or the other.
Right. How do you maintain yourself? Because, yes, because one of the powerful things about suicide, it seems to me, is it highlights to everyone around it that life, I mean, it highlights despair to some degree, but also that life is really a choice. You know, in the end, we could all do that. We are all choosing this thing, this experience. Choosing to continue it. Does that make sense?
It does, yes. And I think that kind of in the aftermath of a suicide, there's that tendency, for a lot of people to ask the question, I guess, every day, like, I'm choosing this, and being, I guess, fully aware of that choice every day. And there's really the potential, I think, for feeling ecstatic in every moment and being so thankful that our feet touch the earth or the soil, that our hands are moving through air, and really fully kind of appreciating that glory and that beauty that is present.
Yeah. And really, I'll tell you, for me, I don't know if I always, the thing I love about writing is I can't do it. Even if I'm writing about events that happened in the past, which I frequently do, I can't actually do that until I enter the present moment. And and in my mind, I let go of judgment on the past or fear of the future. I can't create, and the canvas of creation is in the present moment, and I have to be there to write. And to me, it's always a tremendous relief. Does that,
yeah,
does that make sense?
Because then you're fully immersed in your surroundings. And I think that in some ways, when you're telling a story of the past too, you're at the same time fully immersed in that event too, which is kind of exciting to be fully immersed in two places, or present in two places simultaneously.
I don't know. It's weird, isn't it?
It's just a wonderful way to approach life.
It is, because you are in two places at once, sort of. You're back, you're Gabrielle, the past Gabrielle, and the present one is observing her, observing her suffering or her joy. And so, all right, so you finished this book. Now, I often find that when you write about your own life, there's sort of what you knew before you wrote the book, and then about yourself and that period, and then what you knew after you wrote the book. Did your perspective on that time change after you finished writing Hive Mind?
Yes, it did. I think it allowed me to come to some sort of understanding of what happened, and understanding of who I was at the time on the farm, and kind of facing what occurred, why I behaved the way I did, and why I felt the way I did. And I think it also helped me understand what happened before I went to the farm in my family with my mother, and come to, I guess, a place of peace with that, and a forgiveness, really, for everybody involved, including my mother, of course, and the rest of us that were involved in that situation.
And talk about hive mind. I mean, you chose that word. You give us a scene right at the beginning where you introduce the concept of hive mind. You titled it that way for a reason. What does that mean to you? And how is it of value to you, the hive mind, which refers to bees? I know it from bees, but how does it resonate with you?
It does directly connect to bees, and it's the idea that in a hive, in a community, there each individual, so to speak, is working for the good of the whole, and there's less, I guess, the self-interest is put aside to forward the colony, to forward that community, and to make it be productive and sustain itself. And So there was, I guess, this is another question that I think the memoir asks, or that I was asking as I was writing it, is it possible for human beings to behave like that? Or are we so kind of invested in ourselves and in our perception of the world that we can't really break out of that to fully join a community and put our self-interest aside in order to make sure that that community continues and it flourishes?
Now, it's an interesting question for a writer, because the writer has to like to be alone. You know, the writer has to like to sit at her desk and say, what is of interest to me and me alone, really, at this moment? It's a very solitary experience. I mean, although it feels like a relationship to me, but it's a very solitary experience. So it seems to me that the impulse of the writer is, to some degree, in contrast with that, or is it not?
It does seem like it, but with the writer at the desk, they're usually always coming back to others, right? Or to the community that they're kind of taking a step aside from, and so to speak, right? They're taking a moment of pause to reflect on the community, usually,
right?
That they were just a part of. So,
and of course, you share your work.
Rejoin. You do, that's true.
Go ahead.
Oh, there's that movement, right? Why does somebody write? Usually they write to share it with other people, right?
Yeah.
There's an anticipation of some sort of audience, even if it's just an audience of friends, right? But there's that hope and that gesture to another.
Well, and what we were talking about earlier is, you know, you sit there in your wherever you write, and you're all by yourself there. You're in your imagination. You're putting this thing together, and then it goes out, and the thing has a life of its own anyway. It enters the imaginations of all your readers, and so it changes. And so in that way, you really are sort of all connected through this one idea, but that grows in each of us. So there you go. See, I've answered the question for you.
Yeah, and then you're part of that community.
You're in the community. You are. Now, here's something interesting, and I'll be curious if this happens to you, because have you gone out and done any readings yet or anything for this book?
I have not. I would love to.
Okay, you got to. You've got to, Gabrielle. I command you. So when you do, what I find happens is, after you get up there and you talk about your book, and it's going to be Gabrielle this and Gabrielle, it's just inevitable. It's a memoir, although I'm sure you'll talk about the other people at the book, but it's a lot about you. The first thing, in my experience, people come up and what they want to do is tell you their story. They'll say, thank you, that was awesome. And then they'll want to tell you all about their lives. Another example of the hive mind, I think.
I think so too. There's a telling of the story, right, that continues. And that urge for us to communicate with other people what we've been through. And it's a beautiful thing, right, that somebody connects with your work enough to trust you with their story. I mean, that's such a sacred, I think, thing to share.
It's awesome. It's very moving when it happens. It's very moving. And so, all right, so this is narrative book number one. You've published a lot of shorter pieces. Are you interested in another one of these experiences?
I am. I'm actually working on a cookbook with grilling right now that's going to focus on grilling throughout the seasons, using local seasonal produce. And then at some point I want to write another memoir. I just turned 40 a few months ago, so I'm thinking
congratulations.
In a few more years, it'll be time to bust out another memoir.
Okay. All right, so cookbooks. Now, the poem and the recipe seem very different to me, but maybe not. Well, tell me, how are they similar? How are they different?
You know, I think they are similar. I think that for a poem, you kind of have a brief shot to make an impression and to capture the reader's attention. And I think with a recipe, really, it's similar, at least in that aspect, where the reader has... They're probably scanning a bunch of recipes now online. In the past, we used to be flipping through pages in a book. And you want to capture them, draw their attention in, and make them want to cook that dish, or at least read the recipe through and imagine that they had cooked it. And I think also there's a attention to word choice that is necessary. I mean, obviously, in all writing you do, attention to word choice is essential, but there's kind of that, I think that you can't populate the page with too many words, and the idea is kind of really around being brief and to the point, and taking kind of all the extra stuff away, and communicating in that direct manner without much fluff around it. So I think that they're very similar, like on those levels.
And is finding the recipe as you're refining it and working it through, is it similar to finishing a piece where you're, because you taste, and you're trying to hit some kind of note like you're trying to hit when you're writing? Is it similar in that way also?
Very similar. And there's that idea when you're writing a poem and you're kind of crunching down the lines and taking away any of the extra words and thinking about the line breaks. And thinking about how to create a rhythm within the piece. And I think that kind of, in some ways, you're digesting it again and again and again and again. And I think that if you're a cook and you're working on a dish, and whether you've cooked it 100 times or 10 times, you are constantly tasting it, I think, at every stage to think about what's next and what do I need to add or how long do I have to cook this or what would be the next kind of jump to really bring out all the flavors in this dish. And so it's that the similar, I guess, process of making it whole.
Now, when you finish your semester, do you cook a big meal for all your students? Are you that generous?
You know, I wish I had time. I wish I had time. Plus, I live an hour from school, so.
Not going to work.
Things are pretty rushed usually at the end, but
yeah.
But it would be nice to have a party at some point. Build it into the semester.
Well, do you miss restaurant work at all? I worked in a restaurant for 20 years, so I not
you did.
On the other side. Yes, though I was the front of the house, but. I must say I don't miss it, but do you miss the restaurant work?
You know, there are a lot of things I do miss about it. I miss the teamwork. And in the kitchen, nothing gets done without communicating with others and working.
Yeah.
Really, like, there's the idea of the hive mind. It plays out in the kitchen. I mean, that's kind of, I guess, the clearest realization of it. Yeah, usually there's a chef or an expediter that is kind of leading the charge. But generally, if you work together, things get done in, I think, an incredible way. And so I miss that the most. I miss, you know, in many ways, teaching is very interactive, but there's a lot of times where I'm grading papers or I'm planning class and it's pretty solitary. And so I guess I miss the community in the kitchen. There's always somebody next to you that you talk to and they tell you their life story. You get to know each other really well. Some of my best friendships have emerged from when I've been cooking side to side with somebody. So that part I miss.
It's true.
But It's hard on the body, and as you get old, the camaraderie
was awesome, I got to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's fun.
But
it's fun. It's a good way to spend a Saturday night, right?
Yeah, right. It's intense, though, boy. It is intense. And how many hours did it take you to come down off your shift before you could go to bed?
Oh, at least 3 or 4.
Yeah, seriously. So I don't miss that at all. All right. Well, listen, this has been a very fast conversation, Gabrielle, but I've got one more question for you before I release you. Finish this sentence for me. If writing has taught me anything, it's taught me what?
To love life.
Oh, what a good answer, Gabrielle. To love life. How did it teach you that?
It's taught me to be awake to everything that's around me. When you write, usually you communicate, I guess, through using the five senses. And to do that, well, you have to be awake to the world that's around you. All of its smells and sights and sounds, textures.
Excellent. Love life. I agree. Well, Gabrielle, it's been lovely chatting with you. Good luck with Hive Mind. And I hope there's more to come from you.
Thank you, Bill. It's been a pleasure. Thanks for the interview.
You're very welcome. Love life, everybody. That's a good answer. Well, as I said, this is my last show for the next couple weeks. For those of you who had Hanukkah, just wrapping it up, I hope you had a happy Hanukkah. For those of you who like Christmas, have a Merry Christmas. And so until next year, go do what you love. You can't go wrong.